In the history of World Cup controversies, one of the most talked about happened in Mexico in 1986. It was England against Argentina in the quarterfinals. The play was in front of the English net. Steve Hodge had just tapped the ball over his head, supposedly into the hands of his own keeper. But just at that moment, the Argentinian star, Diego Maradona, leapt up and knocked the ball into the net with his hand. The ref didn't see it. This goal counted, and Argentina went on to win. Today we look back at what's called the Hand of God controversy with the English midfielder Steve Hodge.
Here's Maradona, and England have contained him pretty well so far. This looking dangerous.
Well, that turned around and saw a collision. I saw the ball bobbing into the net.
Looked like handball, that. Maradona celebrating, and the goal's going to be given.
It was a bit of a horror moment, really, because it was a huge game. I didn't want to make a mistake. Nobody did. And I was thinking, well, was that my mistake? And it probably was, because the ball's in the back of the net and the referee has given a goal. And I'd not seen a thing. I didn't see anything to do with his hand at all. I was 6-7 yards away, if that.
That play, that one goal, is still talked about 24 years later. Steve Hodge says, that's the World Cup. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced by American Public Media.
Coming up later in the program, you think your story of the bridesmaid who fell in the punch bowl is a good wedding season story? I'll talk with the groom who suffered acute appendicitis at the altar. First, though, to talk of God on the soccer field. The first round of the World Cup wraps up this week, and it's left us with a number of memorable moments. Two involved the U.S. team. The first was that soft, dribbling goal that made it into England's net. The second was that still controversial goal against Slovenia, the one that was called back.
Landon Donovan to take the free kick. And it's into the back of the net! But the goal is going to be disallowed. It won't count. Adu thought he'd scored a winner for the USA. It is ruled out.
Well, again, the referee, where is it? There's no offsides. Is he calling a foul? I cannot believe that call by the referee. That is horrible.
We're looking back today at a World Cup controversy that is still talked about 24 years after it happened. The Argentinian star Diego Maradona managed to sneak a goal in using his hand. The ref didn't see it, and millions of fans did. Maradona attributed the goal to divine intervention, hence its nickname, the Hand of God. Steve Hodge was right there when it happened. In fact, it was Steve's back pass that was intercepted by Maradona. Like all kids who dream one day of playing in such a game, Steve's passion for soccer, or football as he'll call it, started early. He grew up as a fan of Nottingham Forest, the local pro team, and he would go down to City Ground to watch his idols play.
There was a kind of a brick fence going around the perimeter of the football pitch, and it was probably about five and a half feet high. So I couldn't quite, when I was about seven as a small boy, seven or eight, I couldn't quite see over the top of the brick fence. So I had a little stool taken down by my father and grandfather. The stool gave me an extra foot or so I could lean on my stool and lean on the fence and then see the game quite clearly.
As a very young player, Steve was signed by Nottingham Forest. He played under the legendary English coach, Brian Clough. And he had all the duties of a professional rookie to carry out.
If the older pros wanted a cup of tea and wanted two sugars in the tea, then I had to go and get the teas for them or a biscuit or order the newspaper for the morning or order a wake-up call for the hotel. The young kid has to go around and do all the menial jobs that the older pros probably done before, 10 years before that.
What was the first game when you actually stepped on the field for Nottingham Forest?
My first game was the last game of 1982 season at Ipswich Town, which I got in out the blue, really. I played the striker that day, which means the goal scorer, which wasn't really where I played, but I was just happy to be playing that day. We had a fantastic day. I played pretty well. The manager was so happy with me after the game that he took my boots off, carried me, hugged me around. So I knew he was very happy with me that night, and I was a wee bit embarrassed to have my boots taken off by this fantastic manager. But inside, I was just elated the way that the whole day had gone for me.
What was your first goal scored for Nottingham Forest?
My first goal was at Liverpool, which, you know, for a young kid who'd seen Liverpool were then the best team in Europe. They won the Champions League every year. So for a kid of 19 to score twice in one night was another night of buzzing inside for me. I proved to myself I could score goals against the best teams in Europe. So I had to say I'd made my name. I was in the papers the following day, and it gave me a real confidence boost.
Can you zero in on the instant when your first goal went into the net?
The second you know it's past the keeper's hand, before the ball even hits the net sometimes, you turn with really blankness in your mind, just the elation of the moment that you know, probably a fraction before anybody else knows, that that ball's going to go in the back of the net. So there's a second or two of just total and utter elation that, you know, you've achieved something. And then probably as your teammates surround you and you calm down, that you think about the shot or what happened or who's in the stand watching you, or was that on television, or have you put the video recorder on to record it? All those things as a kid, sure, come into your mind that you want that piece of your history recorded. And from my point of view, because this is 1984 now, those goals, I've never seen those goals on TV because they were never recorded at the time, which is really annoying.
So there's no record of them at any of the television stations that might have been broadcasting the match?
No, nothing at all, I'm afraid. From my sad point of view, yeah, that's that. Those two goals, my first ever goals, weren't on TV, because in those days at the weekend we had a programme called Match of the Day, and the BBC picked just two games every weekend out of the 11 games that were played to go on TV, and the other nine games weren't even seen. So on that weekend, that game wasn't chosen, unfortunately.
Well, perhaps the fact that there's no video means that it could be even grander in your imagination.
Well, it was grand at the time, so it couldn't get any grander than it was in my mind anyway at the time.
It was one thing for Steve Hodge to be playing professional soccer at its highest level, but when he learned he might have the chance to represent his country in international play, that was something special. Steve was called up to play for England against the Soviet Union in early 1986.
To actually get on the plane and fly out with England to Tbilisi, which was a 4.5-hour flight into the Iron Curtain, as it was then, the communist Soviet Union, was exciting. Not scary, but obviously you were going behind the Iron Curtain. There's all these stories about the Iron Curtain. We were being spied on, or we weren't quite sure about it. It was the queue to get into Russia was 4 hours through customs, and we were in like a, one of these old-fashioned, all-wooden little TVs with the communist news of the day flying out, and it was another world, really, and you felt a bit uncomfortable. But for me, I was just, you know, really pleased to be there, because just to be on the bench for England meant that I may possibly have the chance to get on at some point if someone got injured or was playing poorly and make my England debut, which was, you know, had been a dream probably from about 12 or 13.
Do you remember walking into that visitor's dressing room and seeing your jersey hanging
Quite clearly. One of those moments you just think, wow. I've been told in the team meeting I'll be number 16 that day, and walking into the changing room, I can just remember seeing a gleaming white England shirt, and actually the back was turned and the number 16 was facing me anyway. So to see that shirt was kind of like, well, at least I've got an England shirt. Whatever happens from now on in, I've got on the bench for England, I have got an England shirt, and I can tell you, for every Englishman of my generation, to wear an England shirt meant an awful lot.
And you were called in to play in that match too, were you not?
I got a shout from the manager to say, you know, get yourself warmed up, which was obviously, you know, please, yeah, I'll get warmed up, get me on there as quick as you can, please, I want to get on. I remember going on the pitch, and the captain was a guy called Ray Wilkins, who got something like 70 caps at the time, and I ran by him on the pitch, and he went, you know, come on, Steve, you're one of us now. And I thought, that feels good. Wow. I like that the way he said it was, you're one of us. And I joined a kind of special kind of band of people who played for the England national team, and it was a sweet moment.
The World Cup took place that summer in Mexico. England was among the favourites to win, and Steve Hodge was on the team. He had no idea then that he'd play a leading role in one of the most controversial soccer goals of all time. You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. The first game was a bad one for England, and Steve says they were lucky to pull out a tie. England had its breakout game against Poland. They went on to beat Paraguay. Steve Hodge played exceedingly well. He set up two of England's goals. And so England won the right to play Argentina in the quarterfinal, to play in front of 114,000 fans in the stadium and many millions more on television.
It was just a pinch-yourself kind of moment. You know, am I really doing this, or is it a dream situation? Because I come from nowhere on the plane, and now, you know, going to play in a World Cup quarterfinal against Argentina. So that's something you really do think, well, this is the big-time stuff now.
And I guess there'd been a ton of coverage and speculation about an England-Argentina match in 1986 because of the war in the Falklands 3 or 4 years before that, right?
Mm. Well, yes, it was obviously close to the people's minds. People have been killed, British people have been killed in that war, along with Argentinian people. So, yeah, it was fresh in people's minds, and obviously the press made the most of it. It was built up kind of as another war against England, against Argentina. This went back a while, to be fair. The year that England won the World Cup in 66, there'd been a nasty occasion in that game when England played Argentina. Their captain of Argentina was sent off in that game, and after the game, people refused to shake hands or swap shirts. So there'd been a history of England and Argentina games being a bit naughty at times with each other. And obviously the Falklands War and everything else to do with that, and the press building it up into another war, made things a bit tricky.
So take me through that day, the moment before you entered the stadium. Do you come through a tunnel and out into this massive stadium? How did that actually work?
There was a long tunnel, really, and it kind of was below ground level, so you had to go up a little incline to go onto the pitch area. We came out together, side by side. I was probably about fourth from the back. There was mutual respect, to be fair, because they'd had a good tournament so far. We were on a bit of a roll, as I call it, and playing well. So, you know, and it was England and Argentina, and both sides knew that it would be tight.
What do you remember of the crowd, the noise?
I remember more of a hum, really. You've obviously probably seen the World Cup now and the Vuvuzelas in South Africa. This was not that loud, but there was a one or two horns around, and there was a hum, a real loud hum of people. Obviously, you know, a huge crowd of 115,000 people either talking or loud or getting excited, but there was a constant din around the kind of whole of the arena. And when you come out, it's obviously the brightness of a Mexico midday, bright sunshine, it hits you. It's hard to explain. The stadium was vast, a vast, vast stadium. The biggest one I ever played in by a long, long way. Absolutely packed to the rafters of people.
So England against Argentina for a place in the semi-finals.
You know, it doesn't get much bigger than England and Argentina in a World Cup quarter-final, I can assure you, certainly for an Englishman anyway.
Maradona, four England players between him and a possible pass. All route to goal. Free kick against Fenwick and an immediate yellow card.
That quarterfinal game would end up as one burned into the memory of Steve Hodge and every fan of England, though not necessarily for the right reason. I'll talk with Steve about Diego Maradona and the controversial Hand of God play in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. Diego Maradona's been a character on soccer's world stage now for over 30 years. Despite his history of drug abuse and outrageous behavior, he is now back. He's coaching Argentina in this World Cup, and he remains an icon of the game and his nation. Well, ask anyone who saw Maradona play. He was small and fast. He could outmaneuver the best. If you're a fan of England, you remember him for one thing above all else, and that was for ruining England's chances in the 1986 World Cup by scoring a goal illegally using his hand. That play came to be known as the Hand of God. It was something Maradona didn't speak about for years, but he did confess in a BBC interview.
It was your hand or the hand of God?
Yes, you know, for me, man, for me.
It was my hand. With this, I don't mean any disrespect to English fans. But this is something that happens. We used to do this. I had scored goals before in Argentina with my hand. It was a goal that I couldn't reach it. I couldn't head it. So I did like that.
In that 1986 World Cup game, Steve Hodge was a midfielder starting for England. His team had made it to the quarterfinals, and they were prepared for an epic matchup against Argentina. Everyone knew the game would ride on Diego Maradona, and Steve was keenly aware of that man's presence on the field.
I looked out for him just to see that he was the same size as he was when I played for him 2 years before that. And he was still very small, still, you know, 5'5" and built like a tank. But I knew if he had a good day that day, then we would have problems.
And did you have contact with him early in the game?
Yeah, I mean, he hadn't got a set position. He used to float around all over the place and he'd appear in strange places. So he came by me a few times and I'd get close and try and put him off his stride a wee bit and try and tackle him. And, you know, a couple of times I'd bring him down and pick him up and just say, you know, sorry about that and let's get on with things. And so we tried to, you know, without getting too many yellow cards and red cards, we tried to just make him uncomfortable on the first few minutes, which to half-time we did pretty well. He was quite quiet for the first half, but that all changed in the second half.
The score was 0-0. England's goalkeeper, Peter Shilton, seemed to be well in control of Maradona's advances. And then Maradona did something that would become one of the most infamous goals in World Cup history.
He ran towards the middle of our penalty area and popped the ball off to somebody else to do a little 1-2, as we call it, a little kind of wall pass, but played a poor pass and it came behind me onto my left side. And I thought, well, that was my best foot, my left foot. So I just flicked the ball back to Peter Shilton. People say to me, why did you slice it back? But it wasn't really a slice.
Now, your back was to your own goalkeeper, right? So you were knocking it over your head to your keeper.
Yes, I was side on to the keeper. I couldn't see him clearly, but I knew where he would be in relation to where I was and where the ball was. So I just flicked the ball back quite confidently, really, thinking that shouldn't be a problem. We'll just, you know, the goalkeeper will get the ball and we'll relax and get our shape again and push up the pitch and we'll be okay. And I just turned around to this collision with Maradona and Shilton. I didn't know why Maradona was there in the first place. He appeared from nowhere. I've seen it on TV a million times, and he just laid the ball off to somebody and then runs towards the goalkeeper. And you know, only he will know why he took a chance on that. And he probably thought, well, at some point, you know, Hodge may pass the ball back to Shilton and I'll be somewhere around in case the back pass is a bit short.
The ball came back off the foot of Steve Hodge and Maradona gives Argentina the lead. The England players protesting to the referee. But the little man who started it by walking past Glenn Hoddle, that's where the ball came from Hodge. Maradona had continued the run forward. And the goal is given. What point was he offside? Or was it a use of the hand that England are complaining about?
When I turned around and saw a collision, I saw the ball bobbing into the net. It was a bit of a horror moment, really, because it was a huge game. I didn't want to make a mistake. Nobody did. And I was thinking, well, was that my mistake? And it probably was, because the ball's in the back of the net and the referee has given a goal. And I'd not seen a thing. I didn't see anything to do with his hand at all. I was 6-7 yards away, if that.
That close, and you didn't see that he'd snuck his hand up beside his head to sort of direct the ball into the net?
I didn't see a thing. I just saw his head flick. It seems strange the way the ball hadn't gone into the net with some force.
Yeah.
Because it bobbled into the net very slowly. So that did appear to me strange. And I wondered why Shilton was saying handball and one or two players were saying handball. But sometimes players will appeal for things just in the hope the referee might give a decision against Maradona or whoever it might be on that occasion. I've not seen the thing, and I've spoken to people, one or two of my defenders on that day, my help, you know, kind of teammates, who were quite close as well, and they were the same as me. They never saw a thing.
Steve, at the moment, though, when it was clear the ball was in the net, did anyone on your own team turn to you and say, Hodge, what have you done?
No, nobody. Nobody. I look back now and think, well, as obviously was a risky back pass. What was Maradona doing where he was doing at that time? Could the goalkeeper have come out quickly and punched the ball quicker than he did? There's just certain occasions in sports, in any sport, you could name probably a few, where something happens, a guy will take a risk or take a chance and maybe will cheat now and again to try and beat the opposition. And for some strange reason, neither the players or the linesman or the referee actually see what happens on that occasion. And on this occasion, the two guys who really mattered was the linesman and the referee, and they didn't see. And people on the TV, people in probably the stands had seen it, but they couldn't have been sure. And that was the thing. The referee and the linesman could not have been sure what they saw. They had to make a decision within 1 second, and they weren't sure, so they gave a goal.
Now, that wasn't the only goal scored. Maradona had another moment in that match.
Yes, he had a mesmeric moment of magnificence, as they say. It was that good. Gets the ball in his own half and did a little drag back, and I was probably about 3 or 4 yards behind him there. I've seen it on video a million times again. But that was one occasion where the altitude was a problem. I'd been on a bit of a run and couldn't get enough air back into my lungs to get back again, so I jogged back quite slowly to get back in position. But by then, he was away and got on his run, but still 50 yards from goal. You think, well, there's at least 3 defenders and a goalkeeper and a long way to go yet, so we should be okay. But as he got near the penalty area and he'd beaten one or two more, you're thinking, well, this is getting a bit more serious now. And if he gets in the penalty box, no one can touch him there because he might go down for a penalty, so we've got to be really careful now. And then he's facing the goalkeeper. It was a top keeper at the time in probably the world, and he beat the keeper quite easily with a little shinny little dummy. And then he's got kind of a goal ahead of him.
It's one of the World Cup great goals. And there's no
I think most players will tell you that, you know, there's certain players and occasions and skills that they just have to applaud. And I can remember the goal going in and thinking, wow, you know, that was just a bit of a privilege, to be fair. Even though it hurt England and hurt myself, it was a bit of a privilege to kind of be on the pitch when that kind of brilliance was done.
When the game ended, the final score was England 1, Argentina 2. Maradona's team would go on to beat Belgium and West Germany to win the World Cup in 1986. You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. While Steve Hodge was disappointed with the loss, he knew there was no going back. Even controversial calls can't be changed. It's common for players on opposing teams to exchange shirts as a sign of goodwill after an international game, and so Steve thought, why not ask for Maradona's?
And I thought, well, just for a souvenir of my World Cup, why shouldn't I try and get his shirt? Because he's a fantastic footballer. So I went across to him, shook his hand, but there was press and there was his teammates mobbing him. So it just didn't seem right, and I hadn't got enough chance, to be fair, to say, can I have your shirt? So we shook hands and I wished him all the best, and I just walked away. And I got asked by a local journalist to do a piece for TV, which I did for about 2 minutes. And then I walked off the pitch down into kind of behind the goal and down into the changing room areas. And as I arrived down at the bottom of the changing room areas, he arrived with two of his teammates, obviously in high spirits. We just met 5 yards apart, eye to eye. And I just thought, well, I must ask the question again now, because he's got his shirt on still. I'd like it still. And I just tugged on my shirt to intimate I wanted his shirt if possible. And he came straight over. We just swapped shirts. We shook hands and he kind of gave the little praying kind of sign, you know, like they do in the South American countries or in Italy. You know, thank you very much. And off he went with my shirt. And it was just as simple, really, I suppose, fluky as that. And I got it second time around, I suppose.
The funny thing is that you would have had no idea at that point that the shirt would end up becoming this, I don't know, symbol of such a controversial game once people started to talk about the hand of God play.
It's become a really, probably the most famous football shirt I think there's ever been in the history of the World Cup. I think the Pelé shirt of 1970, obviously Pelé's an icon of football as well. But I think for notoriety of a certain game and, you know, the cheating incident and the goal as well, and who the player was and his character, and he's back in the forefront of things now in this World Cup, I don't think there's probably a more famous shirt ever in world football.
Steve, tell me, what was the moment when it became clear to you just how controversial this goal that Maradona had scored, this hand of God goal, had become?
Well, probably straight afterwards, really. The papers were full of cheat and hatred for Diego Maradona, and just the feeling of being, I think the English always play with this fair play motto that we play things fairly and correctly, and we're always within the laws of the game. So in England, it was seen really as a real nasty, naughty piece of work that he'd done that had knocked us out of the World Cup. We got Belgium in the semi-final, and I think, you know, with all due respect to Belgium, I think we would probably have beaten them. So, you know, it cost us a World Cup final place, which was, you know, what I as a player and those players in that team wanted to get to, was a World Cup final. So it hurt us, it hurt the country, and we felt cheated by what he'd done. And he wouldn't admit it afterwards anyway, which probably made things even worse, that he wouldn't even admit that he'd done something wrong. He blamed it on God and other things.
But did you become then angry with the man when you realised that this had happened?
Well, yes, angry, annoyed. But in some ways, you know, sportsmen do these things. They do. Not so much the handballs, but people will dive, or they will, you see it in the World Cup now, people will feign an injury, try and get somebody sent off, and it is wrong. He didn't see it that way. He saw it as being quite cute and quite clever and quite crafty. As an Englishman, we saw it as cheating, wrong, and totally, you know, out of order. We'll never see that thing, you know, eye to eye, because from where we saw it, it was totally wrong, and he should have been really kind of at least owned up after the game straight away and said, yes, you know, I was out of order. I do apologise. It was something that happened in a split second. My kind of instincts came into play. And I do apologise to the English nation, but I can't take it back now, and it's happened. But he quite seemed to gloat in the fact that he cheated the English that day.
What fascinates me more than anything else is that this one goal was, as you said earlier, 24 years ago, and yet people still talk about it. And I, you know, we're watching the World Cup now, and Robert Green let in that dribbling goal against the United States, and you have to know that people will be talking about that 24.
I don't blame you. It was woeful.
Yeah, but what is it about these moments in this sporting event that make them international events?
I think when you are that legendary player of that status, a World Cup captain, with what it was, with who it was, the occasion, who it was against, the whole thing built up to be like an international incident, really.
And then, of course, you have the British sporting press, which will, I mean, they're brilliant at pouring gasoline on anything that they think
they
will
are.
Be a fire.
I mean, 4 years later, we played in the semi-final against West Germany and got beat on penalties and would have played Argentina in the final. And I can assure you there was lots of players in that England squad at that time were looking forward to playing against Maradona in that final. That's why we were so upset to get beat by Germany. We're all hoping this year that at some point, you know, every dog will have his day. And that we're hoping this year that England will get to the final and maybe play against Argentina and maybe be losing 1-0. And then maybe there might be a penalty for us, which is a dodgy penalty. And then in the last minute, there's a handball goal and we win 2-1. That's what the whole of England wants.
What's it like for you, Steve, as you look back on your football career? I mean, you had some amazing years. You represented your country and you had the opportunity to be on the field with that guy when he was at the peak of his game. And do you feel a little bit privileged to have been on the same pitch with him?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think being, you know, a kid who's 7 and 8 playing against the wall and knocking the ball about, when you do reflect and you do look back on your career, then yeah, there will always be a taint on his character. But yeah, I do look back and think, well, I knew I was a pretty good player myself. You know, I played for my country and went to 2 World Cups. And there's certain players, when you play against them, you realise that, you know, they are far better than you are, and not many players will be as good as that. So, you know, thankfully from my point of view, or unthankfully, because obviously he knocked us out of the World Cup, but it was nice to be on the same pitch as Diego Maradona.
I spoke with Steve Hodge from the studios of the BBC in Nottingham. He'll be watching England play tomorrow and hoping it won't be England's last match of this World Cup. Now, if you want an example of how much that moment we were talking about back in 1986 meant to Steve, get this. Steve played at the top level of professional soccer for 15 years. He had a great career. But when he wrote his memoir, a book that's just been published, he called it The Man with Maradona's Shirt.